do the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
Hello and welcome to Big Station Jackson. I'm Tom Al. So Dave Scatina on the board. SP Futures down 30. NASDAQ Futures down 129. So we got an outro morning going here. Lou, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, sir. I'm doing okay. It's supposed to be a lovely day here in Denver. And I think you guys are going to warm up, too. We're finally warming up to like normal temperatures, and I think warmer weather is headed your way.
Is that good?
I think generally yes. Well, especially in Chicago, it's good. You guys have a more difficult winter than we do.
Well, as usual, Lou, there's all kinds of considerations. Last week it was like 40, so my thermostat went out of my place, and I told my guy, you got to have a guy, right? Don't worry about it. Put it in next week when you're not busy. Well, that night I got home, I left all my windows open. It was like 40 in the place, and I couldn't turn the heat on, so that wasn't so hot. But we're heading for like 90 this weekend, so we can't be 75. We've got to either be 90 or 50. It's the new rule. But last weekend, because it was so cold, we had the least violent Memorial Day weekend in like years. So there's people alive because of the cold weather. So,
yeah, well that's right. And Denver doesn't have nearly the crime problem and the murder problem that Chicago does. But I think they're starting to see that sort of a similar trend when good weather occurs. People get shot. You know, the idiots, the bad guys are out doing their thing. I will say I was up in the mountains this weekend and had the pleasure of watching the temperature drop from 73 or 74 down into the mid-30s with hail that switched to freezing rain, and it was so heavy that it covered the ground like snow.
Really?
Yeah, you're always supposed to be ready for sudden temperature changes in the mountains when you're hiking and things like that. And you sort of know that, but it's always interesting to watch it actually happen and to walk outside, or be sitting outside in gorgeous weather, go back inside, get a cup of coffee, butts around a little bit, and then step back outside 20 minutes later and, it's 15 degrees colder. And you just watch the clouds roll in and the temperatures fall and, all that. It made me very thankful I was in a nice warm place. I didn't leave my windows open, of course.
I was skiing once in my ute, and one day we were in Breckenridge. I only went there like once, but we skied Breck, and it was, I want to say a solid 60 degrees. So on some of the slopes, you had to stay like in the shade or else you were on grass, so that wasn't so hot. The next day we went to Vail, and it was like that in the morning. We were in the back area. We weren't great skiers, but different levels of skiing. And all of a sudden it must have gone from God knows what in the morning to amazingly cold to where the top part of the snow like froze. So when you were going through, your like shins were breaking the ice. It was sort of weird. And the next day we went to Copper, and it was like you took the Zamboni out. It was all ice and like two below or something. Talking about 3 days of different stuff. Hey, there's an article here, Lou, for those of you who haven't been watching AMC, stock this morning is now like, it was 78, now it's 70. It was like $10 a month ago. So this is one of these, everybody's buying it because it's going up kind of things. I mean, this mentality is, well, in an old guy's opinion, very, very dangerous. The idea that don't worry, somebody else is going to be dumber than me and buy it even higher. Well, here's a lady. No, I'm not giving her any crap, although it's going to sound like I am. Hannah Miao, Miao? I don't know. Anyway, she writes this article regarding this firm, Mudrick Capital, right? So now the stock was $10. The company is in kind of deep doo-doo. They do $2 a share on revenue, right? $2. Now, I think it's trading, now to this morning it was 78. And they lost $1 last year. Now, who knows if they got any money from the governor or not, but still, movie chains are not doing so hot, right? And there's issues with going.
Well, they're doing better. I mean, the movie chains around us are opening up.
Yeah,
I sat in a movie theater 2 weeks ago.
Okay, so When do you think they're going to have enough people there to where they have a winning month? Well, and what about the last 15? I mean, you know, whatever. I don't know, as I'm saying this, so I don't know how much they get from the government. But the point is, they're $2 a share in revenue. So the most you can make is $2, right? You're not going to make 10, because where are you going to get it? You got to steal. But here's the progress in the mentality here. I'm just casting, you know, a line on the thought process. The company now, evidently they have some or had some treasury shares. Now, I'm not, maybe you know more about corporate finance law than I do, but if they're new shares, you can't just go out and sell them. You gotta have a new issue, right? But if the company,
right,
if the company has brought in treasury shares for whatever reason, you're going to pay employees or you just thought they were a good buy, you can resell the treasury shares. I don't know if there's limits on it. I don't know if there used to be you could only do it at a certain time of the day. I don't know if any of those rules still apply in this kind of, we have a mixture of the most rule-centric world I've ever seen in some areas the rules are gone. You know, so you got to know when you start about rules, you got to kind of pick your area. So yesterday, the company decides at like $27.50 a share, this is insane. We're going to sell out our treasury shares. We probably bought them at $5, right? So they puke out $8.5 million. Well, I don't know, maybe more than that. So this outfit, Mudrick Capital, buys the $8.5 million shares from AMC, right, at $27.50. So it doesn't say here where they sold them. And as the stock rockets up yesterday, they puke out the stock. And they probably make, I'm going to say, $10 a share. You know, I don't know, but say something, because it closed at like 70. So somewhere between 27 and a half, they off this stuff. And, so it means that they made, you know, whatever, $85-90 million in a day. And, so guess what the headline is? How much they lost by not selling it, by not hanging on to it and selling it too soon. Look, they didn't lose anything. They made, if you buy a stock for 10 and sell it for 20, it's trading the next day at 30. I got news for you. You didn't lose 10. You made 10. But are we totally losing the?
What was the news? My recollection is there was a particular story that started driving AMC. What was it? Do you recall that?
No, just it was 20% short or something, wasn't it, Dave? The average stock's like 5. So it's all one of these games, just like they did a few months ago. To the GameStop and everything.
With GameStop.
Yeah. So now this time it's AMC, it's a BlackBerry, which, you know, isn't doing anything, and it's up. Keeps running up. So it's GameStop again, by the way. AMC and BlackBerry, there's a couple more. But there's these five stocks that just keep resurrecting. Whenever people buy them, they just run in and buy them. And the people who are short them just get out of the way. Who own it just get out of the way. But obviously, anybody who has AMC and bought it in the $5 to $10 range because you thought maybe it was a good buy there, it's not a good buy here, I don't think. And it's at $2 a share in revenue. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, what do you think is going to happen to the place? When's a place going to start sending you a $3 a year dividend when their revenue is only $2? In some places,
yeah. I mean, this is something that happens occasionally in the stock market. This is like a tulip, you know, trend. Somebody decides they're gonna pump it, and I was under the impression this is a regular risk of doing business on the stock market, and this is why you don't engage in impulse buying on stocks.
Well, the idea, I mean, if you take it from, you know, the base mentality, if everybody, I mean, and you can sort of hear bits and pieces of this just in conversation sometime. I mean, if a stock were to go down, the media, I mean, even the people who are on national radio and TV that are supposed to know better, the immediately thought is, who is that dirty seller, right? The idea is, if everybody just bought and nobody ever sold, no matter what it is, we'd all be rich in 3 weeks, right? Well, that's not really how the world works, does it? I mean, most of the time. I mean, think about it. If nobody ever sold and everybody just bought, can we manufacture?
Yeah, no, I agree.
I mean, can you manufacture wealth? And the answer is, in the long run, no. I mean, I don't think. But in the short run, I mean, somewhere in here, I mean, you got to be careful if you sell these things. I mean, we have some clients that have, and are not real happy, but unfortunately not very many. But the way the David, I don't know if you've looked at it. David's a many, many year floor trader. The, cut me off if I get too technical here, David, but normally there's something called a volatility skew. It has to do with, whether or not, it has to do with the amount of units people can be short, units by meaning calls or puts. So generally, what you'll see is, people are more concerned about a crash than they are a run up and a sudden run up. I mean, rallies are one thing, but you don't normally get, you know, a 20% down rally or, you know, 20% up moves in the market. I mean, we have had a couple of 20% down moves, you know, very rare, but they have had them. So generally, people are a little more afraid to be short, like out of the money puts, than they are out of the money calls. The idea being even if it goes up, it'll go up at a more reasonable rate. The only exception to that normally is in your, like, soybean and corn and wheat options, where, you know, like a flood or something or a drought is liable to drive, you know, a $3 corn, bushel of corn to 10 bucks. Well, it can only go down to zero. So it is somewhat skewed that your $1.50 puts, say, are only a dollar and a half out of the money, are always going to be a little cheaper than your, you know, $4.50 calls. Because, I mean, the thing could run up with a drought, like I said, it could be anything could happen, a hailstorm, you name it, to where it would run up. But you very rarely see that in stocks. But yesterday, we had some people doing some AMC, and I was trying to find something to do in there. And the run up in the volatility, especially this week, every strike you went up was dramatic. I mean, there were a couple of spreads in there that I won't say in the air, but stuff from that we used to do on the trading floor years ago that were absolutely spectacular. I mean, to where the break even's like 130 or something. But you know, nobody now knows how to do those spreads. They're certainly a blast from the past. Plus, you don't have very many people that I would allow to be naked short anything. But David, I was looking at the 63.73. Call spread. 63s are $23 or $25, and the 73s are $23. There's like no difference.
That's insane.
Yeah, the volatility went from like 550 to 700. I mean, it's absolute insanity, Lou. But anyway, this lady is giving this company all kinds of grief. Now the company now, other than the bozos who are trading from through Robinhood, they think that the stock, let's puke this out at 27.5 and make some money. Somebody buys it from them, makes another, say, 10, 15, or 20, and the press is all over for selling too soon. I mean, yeah, how's that for a mentality?
I think is just dumb. That's a bad analysis. But again, I think it reflects that. I saw a really interesting article yesterday or the day before, talking about the limited expertise, and this was in respect to COVID reporting, the limited expertise that's available in newsrooms and how much bad information is spit out by people who are really don't have a lot of expertise, but who find themselves, you know, thrown into an issue. So presumably the finance news found themselves, somebody said we need to get a bunch of bodies on this AMC story because it's hot. And so they throw a bunch of reporters who really aren't good at this stuff into the mix, and these people credulously report bad information, or they make bad analysis. And I think that's an example. What you've decided is another example of that. In the COVID context, of course, the examples were, you know, manifest throughout the entire, you know, the entire reporting on that story, and continue to be manifest on the reporting on that story.
Well, you know, it is interesting. You obviously keep track of, well, you're more of a worldly wise guy than me. I'm hanging here looking at the market. I noticed that every time, very rarely, well, sometimes in the economic area, there's a story that I happen to know like a real lot about, right? And it's always interesting reading the articles regarding a story you actually do know something about.
I mean, this was my take when I was at JAG, I was involved in some stories that got picked up by 60 Minutes. And I was astounded at how bad the information was and how badly 60 Minutes handled the actual facts involving, in a couple of cases, drug use and military discipline issues. And I remember thinking to myself, if they're this bad on something like this, you know, how bad are they on virtually every other story they cover? And there's an effect that's identified in social science relating to information flow and people's ability to sort of stovepipe or segregate bad information that they get from a source. They put that off in the corner and then tend to accept other information from the source as truthful or verifiable, when they've already seen a demonstrated example that the source is incompetent. In the law biz, we refer to being able to show that you've messed something up or you've taken a position contrary to the position you're taking now as impeachment. It's used to break down the credibility of a witness or a source of information. But in terms of reporting, lots of people will be personally aware of the incompetence of the news professionals or a particular news source. My favorite is NPR. They just blow up a story. They get the details wrong, and yet on the next story, you're willing to listen to them and say, "Well, that's an interesting report, and that information sounds okay." To go back to your topic, I just wonder if this reporter was somebody who got pitched into this story, and the reporters are always looking for an angle, and she thought, okay, here's an angle I can exploit without really thinking about it or without having the expertise to.
Well, but it's not. She's not.
And that's common.
What I'm thinking, I think she. I mean, again, we're picking on this poor girl, but I think that is the mentality now. If you bought something at 10 and you sold it at 15 and it's trading 20, you lost 5.
I'll tell you where you see that mentality a lot, and that's in the plaintiff's bar when you start seeing derivative lawsuits and other kinds of shareholder actions. It's not uncommon for a company to be sued by shareholders who come in under the guise of, hey, we're trying to protect the corporate assets, and try to second guess the management team. You cheated us out of X amount of money by selling too early. And you see that mentality throughout a lot of those actions.
By the way, Lou, since we've been talking about AMC, it's down $15. Are we the cause of that?
Probably.
So David, be honest here. I know you, I know you like Lou. When he mentioned his days at JAG, don't you immediately assume he's hooking up with Catherine Bell?
I don't assume anything, Tom.
I'd say Lou would have been right there.
Right. That's right. Never assume. Wrong service and wrong. As I've said many times, I think I watched 10 minutes of that show, and I'm one of these guys that when stuff on a TV, it appears on a TV screen that just isn't credible, I typically say something. My then wife had the show on, and I watched about 10 minutes of it, and she basically looked at me and said, if you're not going to stop talking back to the television screen and saying things like, well, that's ridiculous, or that's wrong, or that couldn't happen, then you need to go somewhere else. And that's pretty much my experience with that TV show. I wanted to raise a sports issue right out of the gate.
Oh, I was going to add, I got one waiting for you, by the way.
Okay, well, let me address this one, because this is a little more esoteric. So the NFL, settled with the Players Association in a universal settlement back in, I think, 2013, the issue of concussions and traumatic brain injury, and essentially established a large fund that pays out, and there's a lot of red tape involved in getting one of these settlements. But at the bottom of it, it involves proving that the player suffered cognitive decline as a result of football. In other words, they started at some base level of cognitive ability, and then at after X number of years in the NFL, that cognitive ability declined, or there was a measurable decrease in cognitive ability. So to do that, they had to establish sort of a baseline cognitive ability for the players. But because they went out and looked at data, and because attorneys look at every little detail and try to work every little angle, the baseline for players was not the same for all players. And specifically, the baseline for black football players was lower. In other words, the assessment of their cognitive ability when they started the game was lower than it was for white players. And this was done on a racial basis. It was supported by data like the Wunderlich tests and things like this. But it was not done on an individual basis. They were doing it on a group basis. The impact of this, of course, is that it is harder if you're a black player who's alleging cognitive decline. You've got to have a cognitive decline that is, percentage-wise, larger than a white player.
Well, you can always commit suicide and have your brain taken apart and prove it to them.
Well, the cognitive decline can be measured. They can't prove it necessarily with CTE without an autopsy, but that's assumed. So the causation, that was the big deal in the settlement, is that they eliminated the causation issue in exchange for, frankly, lower payouts, but to more people than they would have established through court action.
Lou, can I ask you a quick question?
This has now hit the fan.
All right, but
black players are coming in saying this is unfair.
All right, time out for a sec. Just in general, as soon as they pop that settlement out there, and I thought the thing was a travesty on day one, not because I know...
Sham of a travesty of a...
So, the reason why, and I certainly don't know the details of what you're talking about, but it strikes me that this affects people, later in life, that you don't even know they have it. So the idea, and one is, for a while we were, very friendly, but then he left the trading floor and I didn't see him for years, but Doug Buffone, Dr. J and I used to have breakfast with Dougie every day when he was training to be a market maker. And I'm going to say this was 81, 82. He was fine. And he had probably retired in, 77, something like that, David? I don't know. I guess you can check that out. But he was, you would never have guessed there was any problem with him. So how the hell were these guys capable of having any kind of a settlement when he had no idea what the depth of the problem is? It's like having a mesothelioma settlement 25 years ago, only to find Merlin Olsen and Johnny Latner and all these people you never even dreamed of had. You had no idea the depth of the problem. So how the hell can that settlement
you apply for the benefit once the symptoms start manifesting themselves. And so you could apply for, you don't have to apply right after you finish playing. The application goes once you establish that you played X number of years in the NFL, there is a presumed CTE element in any cognitive decline. And so the players, as these players are affected by this, they then file for benefits and submit to the neurological examinations.
Okay, well, what, David and I what, know, what he, David better than me, knows a dude, I just don't because I knew his brother real well, or two of his brothers, died and his brain went to, where does he go, to Boston or someplace? Comes back, the guy played for the same high school David and I went to, or maybe a different one, but Southside High School, and played football in the Ivy League. And the guy's a mess. A mess to the sense that he died, and his brain was a mess. How taking the NFL's side for a second, how the hell can you prove it didn't happen in high school or college?
Well, that's exactly right. That was, and when the settlement was announced, you know, we talked about this. I said, well, I understand why the players' union would take it, because establishing causation for CTE would be a nightmare for most football players, having come up through high school and college with there's no medical records on these guys that you could reach with respect to concussions or things like that, head injuries. You know, they come into the National Football League and who knows how many blows to the head they've suffered already that would be significant with respect to this illness. And so proving that was going to be a really difficult thing, and it was going to have to be done on a player by player basis, and it was going to have to be, fought over. I mean, the first issue that I think would have immediately been raised by the NFL is something called the workers' compensation bar, which precludes you from suing your employer for an injury occurred in the course of your employment. Your obligation and your requirement is that you file for workers' compensation. Well, the plaintiff's bar did not want to do that, because obviously that would limit the recovery dramatically. So that was the first line of defense. The NFL was going to come in and say, look, we're sorry, but your action is not properly in this court. You need to be filing a workers' comp claim. So that would have been the start. Then the issue would have been causation. And, you know, some players would have been eligible, some players wouldn't. The science on this is not well understood. And especially for the older guys. You know, they have baseline, they started the baseline cognitive testing for concussions, roughly 10 years ago. But most of these claims are coming from people who played in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and 90s. There is no baseline. That's why they're using these race norming standards. That are race normed standards in an effort to try to set a baseline for players who didn't have the measurements. And all of this goes into a lawsuit. The thought process was that it could be decades before any money reached players who were affected.
Well, how are the colleges unscathed? We gotta head off to break. Lou, you know how we failed miserably this morning? Since this AMC is down now $24 since we started saying it was a bad buy, we neglected to sell it short. That's what everybody else does. S&P futures
out there instead of talking on the phone.
Yeah, S&P futures down 29. That was David's job. He's supposed to sell short the stuff we say is not a good buy. S&P futures down 129. NASDAQ is down 127. Ouch, this morning in the market. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar.
To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Alley. Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. We have Mr. Lou Michaels with us as well. SP Futures down 29. NASDAQ Futures down 118. But the fun is watching this AMC. It's trading 78 when we came in. Now it's 58. That's kind of a move before we even start the day. Dow futures are down 176. Individual stocks in the Dow, we've got the Boeing down $3. We've got Goldman Sachs down 260. We've got Microsoft down $2. We've got Salesforce down $2. So everything's kind of at a downside. The only one that looks up is Merck is up 50 cents. And Amgen is up 84. So mostly down on the Dow. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 101, that's 0.6%. Now, they were up earlier in the week and last week. FTSE down 70, that's a full percent. CAC around down 34, that's a half a percent. In Asia, we got the Nikkei up 111, that's 0.4%. Shanghai down 12, 0.3%. Hang Seng down 331, that's 1.1. And there's a very strange, I don't know, David, I don't know if you've been noticing this, but the Nikkei has totally been fading the mainland stocks lately. I don't know why. I mean, not every day, but damn near every day. And I don't know why, but it doesn't happen too often. 10-year 1.59, so it's down just a little, down a little bit. The Bund, minus 0.18. They've gotten back to, minus 0.09, so they're making a move towards zero, and now it's going back the other way. Japan, positive 0.08. The UK, positive 0.82. Oil, which Brent had gone over $70 a couple days ago, is now trading 71.36, up a penny. West Texas down 4 cents, 68.79. So quiet in the oil patch. Natural gas down a penny, and we've got I'll just hit the button for the graph here, which we don't need. Oil. It all takes a bad click, and there you are. RBOB 219. So you're not going to get your gas for 220 this week like you did a few weeks ago, because RBOB, the wholesale prices, for those of you who don't know what that is, that's the price of wholesale gas in what, New York Harbor, right, David? Is that what RBOB is?
I believe it is. I'm not sure. I'll look it up.
Gold down $14, $18.95, so it's struggling to stay above 1900. Silver down 32 cents, $27.88. Copper down 4 cents, $4.54. And crypto, Bitcoin is 39,004. That's up $1,100, 1,106 to be exact. David, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. What about our Cubs? All with second string players. All of a sudden, they're playing well.
Yeah, they're on fire. Morning, everyone. It's 6:38 in Chicago. Currently, our weather is 61 and sunny. It's going to be a beautiful day. Highs of 84 with sunshine. For our Phoenix listeners, start out the day. It's 81 and clear. It's going to be a warm one. 107 and sunny. Traffic, there's normal backups on the Kennedy and the Eisenhower due to construction. We do have slowdown at 55 North at the Rhine Expressway, at the Rhine ramp, which we always do every day. And there's an accident report on the Eisenhower east at the Laramie exit. In sports, NBA playoffs, the Suns take on the Lakers for Game 6 tonight. In baseball, the Sox game was postponed last night. They take on the Tigers today. Cubs beat the Padres. They are on fire, 6-1. They play the Giants tonight. Diamondbacks lost to the Mets, 7-6. And they'll take on the Brewers. The Belmont Stakes will be this Saturday, June 5th. Back to you, Tom.
So they nailed the owner of that horse, the Kentucky Derby, yesterday, right? Did he had to give up his...
Yes.
So he had to give up the prize. He had to give up the prize money, right?
He failed second drug test, but it. I mean, we already have a tentative explanation or a tentative admission from the trainer that the drug was probably in a topical antifungal treatment that they rubbed on the horse. So the question is, you know, what's going to happen to this guy? He's banned. I assume he's going to be banned from the Derby for a while. Let me go back to...
That's not his first time, so...
The story we were talking about with this race norming issue. The reason the race norming was used is because, as I said, they didn't have data for players. You know, most of the players who were making these claims coming in from earlier decades. And so what's finally happened is somebody at the NFL... I mean, that race norming something like this is fraught anyway. And what finally happened was a group of players finally got together and challenged this, and the NFL is in the process of readjusting those rates. But again, at the time, this was I won't say a logical choice, because the public relations implications of it were awful. But at the time, this was at least a rational choice, in the sense that there was data to support these lower baselines for black players. Now, this would be racist under anybody's definition, because you are literally assigning a standard to a bunch of people based on race rather than in their individual capacities. But that information isn't there. You don't have the individual capacity information, so accordingly, you have to do this kind of stuff. I just wondered if somebody at the NFL, when they were assessing this, said, you know, we could really find ourselves in a boiling pot of tar if this comes out that we've been doing this, even though we can rationally explain it. The public relations implications are. You know, spectacularly bad, and so the NFL has backed off on it.
Well, Lloyd, there's a logic to it. I can see where they're going with this. I mean, I'm going to guess that in the 50s, 60s, 60s more, from the people who have died and have been tested, 70s with it, I'm going to postulate that there doesn't seem to be any difference when you go and actually take people's brains apart, in black people get it and white people get it, right? I mean, there's nothing that says that if you happen to be a black player in the 60s, you have twice as much chance of your brain being a mess when you die as a white guy, or the other way around, isn't it? I mean, it basically has to do with concussions, right?
Right. No, the risk element is the same. The only question is whether there was an effect. And we know that CTE does not affect a huge number, I can't say the majority, but a significant number of the players. It just doesn't. So the idea that everybody who's suffering cognitive decline could come in and make one of these claims, again, this was something that was settled by the lawsuit. So the assumption is, if you played in the NFL, you have cognitive decline, it is the result of this condition.
Okay, but...
So that was the assumption. But you still have to measure... You still have to show the cognitive decline.
Well, so you're trying to figure out, before you, dissect somebody's noodle, whether or not they have it or not. Okay, so then you...
That's... No. You don't figure that out anymore. That's presumed. If you played in the NFL and you meet the requirements, the longevity requirements for the settlement, then it's presumed that you have it.
Okay, but then again, it's what degree?
If you have cognitive decline.
But now, when Dave Dorson, from what I read, of course, again, what we read is that when he had it, it was affecting all parts of his personality at a fairly early age. Now, Doug Buffon was a lot later, and his wife said it never affected his, you know, his kindness, his moods as much as it did when he was still on the score. He would have to spend 2 and 3 hours writing up notes for like a 15-minute interview, and the notes were all repeats of the notes he'd put on the page before. He just was absolutely lost it, but he never got nasty to people or anything like that. Where other people goes the other way, their whole personality changes.
Yeah, it manifests. I mean, that was that terrible Junior Seau case.
Yeah,
when he committed suicide. He was noticing that his temperament had changed. But that, again, all of that goes now with the settlement. All of that goes by the wayside. You come in, you said, I played in the NFL, I think it's 4 seasons. I played in the NFL 4 seasons. Okay, sit down. Are you suffering cognitive decline? Yes. Here's my mental acuity ability test right here. Okay, we're going to measure that against a baseline. Because we don't have a number for you because you played back in the 70s or the 80s. We don't know what your brain was doing then. We have an assumption baseline cognitive ability for you. Are you below that? Yes, I am. Okay, you've got the disease. So you're eligible for a settlement. We don't get into, you know, how it manifests itself or whatever. It's a straight measurement against this standardized baseline.
Okay, well, so how can I put this politically correctly? Is there any way? It has nothing to do with color, but if you went someplace to some crummy high school that all they cared about was you played football, and you snuck into, you know, some school that could care less what your scores were, and you went to some crazy, you know, summer school program, Reed, North Carolina, and never went to a class in your life or damn near. I mean, how could anybody think that your cognitive base is the same as some guy who, black or white, went to Stanford and got A's? I mean, in the case of
players where they don't have the measurements, that's what they have to do. So there's demographic data or there are demographic data for, you know, these populations. Here's the average cognitive ability of a 21-year-old or 22-year-old white male in 1982 or 1985. And here's the baseline for the cognitive ability of an average black male in 1982 or 1985.
Have you ever met the average guy?
Those levels are different.
Have you ever met an average guy?
That's the issue in this case.
Well, there's no such thing as an average guy or girl.
Well, but there has to be because we can't make measurements of these people back in 1982 or 1985.
But I wouldn't
so
consider.
We have to make an assumption.
I wouldn't consider you average, or David, or me. I don't know which way I'd put
it.
I'm
well below average. I didn't grow up in Lake Wobegon.
All right. So what happens? What happens to colleges here? Plus, I got another question for you about colleges. What happened to colleges? What happens to Dave and Dave's buddy? I knew the guy. What happens to him? He never played pro ball, and he has it. Are we going to blame it on 2 softball fights he might have got into, or are we going to say the college is at fault?
We're not going to. And again, this was why the settlement made sense when it was signed. We're not going to worry about the causation, you know, for the NFL.
But I'm saying this guy never played in the NFL. He just played in college.
Okay, well he's not. I mean he might be able to sue the colleges. Although those cases have proven to be unsuccessful.
They haven't been won. Is anybody's won yet?
Not against colleges, no. Not that I'm aware of.
How the hell can that be?
You know, assumption of the risk.
And then what do you take it down to the high schools
the
then
colleges?
Too?
Well, I mean,
yeah.
Well, I mean, some people with the way they practice in college and the way they don't practice in pro. I'm going to say you probably got way more head knocks in college ever did in pro now, especially if you're not a starter. I bet it's not even close.
But suing the college is different than, you know, you could sue the NFL because the NFL is an employer. The colleges are not employers.
Well, in somebody's mind, in somebody's daffy mind.
Well, yeah. I don't think that's disputed anywhere. There's lots of case law on that. Colleges are not employers. Now that some of that may change. The Supreme Court, as we thought, I'm going to be prepared to talk about this when the case comes down. Supreme Court's taken up on appeal the NCAA's antitrust issues on paying athletes. And so how that case comes down may drive a lot of jurisprudence in other areas like tort liability.
What do you make of the Illinois?
Or head injuries or other injuries.
What do you make of the Illinois law passed this week and signed by our buddy Pritzker that allows college students to essentially sell their own likeness, which I think was kind of long in coming, but they also, and I didn't know they were even going down this road, they would allow a college kid to hire an agent to market his likeness. How do you separate an agent from marketing your mug from an agent that's going to represent you for the pros? It's going to be the same
guy. I don't think you can.
Well, they're doing that. They're saying if David went to University of Illinois, he can go out and try and get commercials because he's the quarterback on Illinois, and you got an agent to do that. It was just signed this week, wasn't it, David?
Yeah, I'll take a look. I think it was.
I mean, the NCAA hasn't really spoken on that, but past history would tell you that the minute that law goes into effect and some kid signs an agent for marketing himself out of Northwestern or out of Illinois, the NCAA steps in and says you're ineligible.
Well, that's my next question. Who's the pecking order? Is the NCAA more powerful than the state in their own mind or in anybody's mind?
The state has no. As a general rule, the state would not have the authority to tell the NCAA that they've got to let these kids play. They would have to set up, and this goes to a point that I had made probably 10 years ago when we were talking about football playoffs. And I made the point that, look, we are going to move toward a position where the NCAA becomes irrelevant for almost every major collegiate sport that's making a lot of money. Because their eligibility rules and their other requirements are irrelevant, basically, to the top flight teams that are playing in these things. So this was in particular with regard to football, where I just said the collegiate football, the SEC, the ACC, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, all of these guys could basically tell the NCAA to go pound sand. Set up their own 64-team league that had, four 16-team conferences that had their own playoffs, and they just tell the rest of the collegiate football world, "Been nice to know you."
But then, that would be
kings of the hill.
That would be really taking your coat off in the wintertime if they did that, because it would absolutely drive the population and the lawmakers into, "Hey, come on, this is not amateur. Let's." Stop this facade.
That's what I mean. I mean that would effectively, if these football teams did this, that would effectively mean the end of amateurism in college, because the NCAA, which I, you and I are pretty much convinced it's gone anyway. But the NCAA would be powerless to stop that. The thing that holds the NCAA together right now is everybody kind of looks around and says, okay, we're all in this together. But it's becoming increasingly clear that a number of the elite athletic schools are not in this together. They are generating huge amounts of revenue and I will use my alma mater as an example. Air Force is not one of the power conference schools. It plays in the Mountain West Conference. We're not gonna draw huge crowds. We don't even draw huge crowds at our own stadium. But we benefit greatly from, the Alabamas and the Ohio States and the Penn States. We benefit greatly from those programs. They generate huge amounts of revenue that pour into Mountain West coffers as a result of the national playoff system. And this is the NCAA, distributing this money. At some point, that stops. And the large, as I said, the large power teams, power conference teams, just look around and they say, you know what, we're going to set up our own operation, and and the rest of you can have a nice life, fine with the NC2A, and worry about your eligibility requirements.
Well, no, as usual, but, I mean, you and I, you know, kick around our politicians only because they basically have their ass pointed to us all the time, so they're easy to kick. But I'll admit, I did not read this entire law that Pritzker passed, but I'm going to guess if I did, I'd be appalled. But how exactly does this work on a day-to-day basis? I'm saying, let's forget all about football, because we get to be very football-centric on Stacks and Jacks, because, you know, on baseball, depending on who's here and what their favorite thing is.
But, it's the greatest game ever, that's why.
Okay, but there's one man's opinion. So, but I'm saying, what if, let's take a game that is, instead of just being I'll take a shot here, the game for white Easterners, this lacrosse is getting pretty popular, okay? So let's go back to one of the best lacrosse players ever, Jim Brown. Okay, he was a two-sport guy, if not many people remember that, from Syracuse and football and lacrosse. I mean, can you imagine that guy playing lacrosse? Good Lord. But now what if there's this lacrosse team and you got Jim Brown on it, and all of a sudden everybody knows him from football, so he's more marketable than most lacrosse players, if not all. So all of a sudden he gets a contract with Dave Scatina's lacrosse stick maker, and the school uses Lou's. You know, does it follow through that he can get his own sponsor for stuff he's wearing, a la Michael Jordan, and stuff he's using that conflicts with the schools? I mean, do they think of any of this when they did this law? And I haven't read it, so I don't know. I'm guessing no. I mean, where exactly does this land? It's not as easy as, you know, Madden putting, you know, David's face on a football game and then paying the school and not David. I mean, that's the easy part, okay? Or if David wants to be in a commercial or model a flannel shirt someplace, that's the easy part. But that doesn't begin to get into the depth of where this could go. I mean, does that mean that everybody on the Notre Dame team is wearing Nike and David's wearing Adidas because he got a separate deal? I mean, do they really think this through? I mean, do we really want all that? Or, I mean, I don't know. I'm just asking the questions.
But here, I'm sorry, Lou. I was reading about this bill, and it's being passed in other states, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Mississippi, New Mexico, and it goes into effect July 1st.
Really? So pretty quick, like 30 days. But, I mean, there's a lot to this. I mean, whether you think shoe deals or lacrosse stick deals are moral or not, I don't think you want your three best players going in three different companies. Or maybe, I don't know. I mean, I'm just asking a question.
Let me give you an example. I mean, my alma mater for law school, Duke. I mean, Krzyzewski and the Duke program got mega bucks from whoever it was, Nike, for requiring their players to wear Nike products. You know, they signed a contract with Nike to supply their athletic stuff, and they got mega bucks for that. So the question is, a kid comes in and says, "Well, I've got my individual contract, as you pointed out, Chief. I got my individual contract with Adidas." So now it becomes an issue of Krzyzewski, who's going to retire, by the way, after this next season. It's an issue for Krzyzewski to, and I think a Chicago native is going to be his successor. Anyway, Krzyzewski says, "No, you gotta wear Nike." And so the kid says, "Well, I'll take my talents elsewhere." So the question now becomes, what's the draw on these programs? In Duke's case, it's the coach. But, you know, we're going to see the same battles that we had with the NBA players on corporate attire, and I think that's going to be a real issue. It's a can of worms.
Well, then somewhere in the bill it should say what exactly you can. I mean, can you sell Coca-Cola on the side of the Notre Dame helmet? I mean, if it's your helmet, are there limits to this or not? I mean, David's one who's kind of reading it as he goes here, but. Is there any kind of limit to this, or what?
I think the individual marketing of the athlete's image and likeness and whatever. I think that's going to be, in some cases, relatively straightforward. So you can't use the kid's image on a video game, for example, without paying some kind of royalty. But with respect to these closer calls. You know, can the kid market his own shoe brand or whatever, without ramifications for the school. I don't know. I haven't seen. I mean, I think what these bills, and I'm sort of generally familiar with these multi-state bills on this issue, but I think the general supposition is we're gonna pass this law with broad language, and we're gonna let the market sort it out.
Well, okay, but you're gonna end up
frankly means a good day for lawyers, and I'm always happy about that.
Well, so your football player or basketball player is gonna walk down campus looking like a stock car driver with 15 patches on his.
It's going to be worse than that. Imagine the average 18 or 19 year old who's got tremendous athletic talent, and with a bunch of guys, you know, at a college team, most of whom are never going to touch the pros, and this kid's walking around basically dictating to his sponsor, whoever it is, hey, I want you to get a deal for my buddy over here, and I want you to get a deal for my buddy over here. And, you know, who's going to tell the 18-year-old no?
Yeah, it's I'm not so sure the schools should be the sole beneficiary of this, but there's got to be some other way to do this. So I don't know, I'm not smart enough to figure it out, but I can see what we're up to. How many in golf now? You can have 3 or 4 on your hat and 4 or 5 on your shirt. They'll be like a NASCAR driver pretty soon. We used to have there's a school of thought.
It's going to get problematic, and it's going to get problematic in a hurry. Like I said, they're relying on the market and litigation to sort it out.
Well, there's a. If you talk to a marketing person, we used to have guys. And we might ask him back. Our buddy, not Chase. What's his name? I'll find him. And he and I would talk all the time. And I'm a guy that if I go to a movie theater and there's a commercial, I want to get up and leave. I didn't pay for to watch a commercial, but. Those guys, I mean, David walked 2 blocks into work this morning, in this guy's parlance, it was a waste of a very nice ass. It could have been a Coca-Cola sign in it. You know, you wasted a billboard. You know, and in their mind, why wouldn't you put Coca-Cola on the side of the Notre Dame helmet? I mean, you're wasting, just like we talked about earlier, the people who bought the stock from AMC and made $85 million in a day, they screwed up. They could have made $170. I mean,
we saw this with name brand clothes, and we still see it with name brand clothes, Chief.
Yeah,
that's advertising.
Yeah, and people. I mean, when I was very young, the first place. Oh, we'll talk about it next week, Luke. It's a long story about the first place I saw at a bar where they were selling T-shirts with the name of the bar, and I said, "Who would be dumb enough to buy those?" Was I wrong? I mean, look what it did to the. What's the name of the place, David? Where they spots all over the world. There was one in Chicago here. Where we didn't get
the Hard Rock Cafe.
Yeah, the Hard Rock Cafe. Boy, I was wrong. I hope they didn't have me as their marketing guy. SP Futures down 31, down NASDAQ Futures down 139. Lou, have a great weekend. We'll be right back, Mr. Dan Janitas.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and all, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howley, Dave Scatino on the board. We have Mr. Dan Janitas, Liz from Kratos Capital, and I'm going to a phone call. Oh, is this Kratos Capital?
Yes.
Can I talk to that Dan Janitas guy? Dan, I understand you bought 27 million shares of AMC at 27. You sold it at 40, and now it's trading 78. What's the matter with you?
You get the wrong guy.
you'd have a customer
it,
like that.
Watching that was a little. It was like being on a roller coaster. It was really kind of crazy the performance yesterday, and also I guess just looking at it and thinking this is like as far as you get from what I do. If you want to give an example of an something that I don't do or what would be considered an opposite situation, this is a really good example. Really nothing going on with the fundamentals driving that, and you know the whole meme stock revolution or trend, as I should say. I just don't get it. So I leave that to other people.
Dan, have you ever? I don't usually. I mean, looking for, you know, breaking news, like if an asteroid hit New York, I kind of keep one eye a little on the TV when I do the show. I've never seen like this morning. AMC comes out and they're going to sell 11 million shares, right?
Right.
With the 11 million shares is a warning telling people they don't know what's going on with their stock, but they warn retail investors from buying it. At the same time they're going to sell it, they're telling people you're an idiot to buy it. And yet, I bet it sells.
There's that not wanting to miss out. You know, I think people that aren't reading the whole story, you know, just have this sort of fear of missing out on something that such a quick buy. And unfortunately, you know, it's always been like this. But I think more importantly, lately, where we're so used to getting information, so used to getting results, and everything so quickly, people are, you know, my time frame. Oh, wait a minute, you're telling me I have to wait a year to get, you know, a double-digit return rather than, you know, I can do it in a day.
Yeah.
So, and actually, I don't know if you hear that, but I do hear that from some clients. And oftentimes they're talking about a spouse or they're talking about a friend who was able to make a lot of money, say, in Bitcoin or even in something like when they were talking about GameStop. A few months ago, I had a client say, yeah, you know, my friend was able to make all this kind of money. Why aren't we doing that? I said, because you paying me to manage your risk, and you know this is a retirement account of yours. You know you don't want to be putting your, you know, that level of risk. I says is really not what I think you want to do. If you want to do that, put a little of your money aside and do it on your own, or find somebody who is willing to do that. But no, that just is not my thing.
I'm glad I'm not the only person getting those calls, Dan. I'm glad I'm not the only person. You saved my mentality by saying that. But a little deeper, and then the same thing I was going to ask you. You always anticipate what I'm going to ask you, which is interesting. Do you notice not just this kind of stuff? I mean, I got to believe that if it was, you know, if we were doing stocks in the, what was it, 1600 that or 1700, that somebody would have said, "How come I don't have a tulip in my account?" I mean, people don't change that much, but I'm sensing. Not sensing, but my observation, and I'll see if yours is the same, really since 2009, when we've had basically negative interest rates along the way, the whole idea of investing, even for older retired people, the thought that you're going to invest, now you, don't take this wrong, are somewhat of a throwback, and you're still trying to find places that are going to provide you income. Through dividends or whatever, interest payments on bonds, whatever it may be. Yet, that gets you a clientele that, you know, I'm sure is fine and they're really good. And my clientele are people that want some protection in their portfolios generally. Well, guess what? those clientels are not all that big. They're probably, in my opinion, they're the smartest, but they might not be. The rest of the world is absolutely, whatever is hot, I just got to be in it. I'm never going to make any money from a company for them sending me a check. And I'm sure as hell never going to make any money on bonds. So I need to be in what all these other people are making money on. I need to get in there, find a way to get in there earlier or pay somebody who's going to get me in there earlier. And to wait till the last second, and God help you if you sell a stock at 65 and it tops out at 66 because you missed a dollar. I mean, the mentality over, this is not just this week because of AMC. This is the last 12 years in my mind. Now, it's my, what do you think, I'm all nuts or no?
No, I think you're right on the market. It's, it's actually what happens. The way that we, the value that we add that goes over and above finding yield and finding, preservation of capital and all that is, small and micro cap stocks. And the way that we manage risk there is to get to know management really well and really get to understand what we're buying. And we're really looking at the fundamentals, looking at the management team. We're looking at what they've done and what they can do. So we have a lot of upside in that area. But you really got to know the company, and you really got to know the trading of those particular stocks. You got to understand it. You got to be in and out when it's the right time. And I would say I have a pretty big advantage over the retail investor going in and trying to do it on his own, because we have better access to inventory and to capital. And now that the traders out there know that that's what we're looking for, we don't have any trouble buying it or selling it. And we're in a very liquid market now, so it's also playing into our... And so we do have what I'd consider a more, a higher-end, higher risk, but higher, much higher return. And again, managing the risk is the important thing. My question to somebody who is going in and trying to, play a GameStop or an AMC is you have to ask yourself the question, how am I managing my risk? And you may be able to do that with options. You may be able to do that with some sort of downside protection. But you got to ask yourself that bigger question, because this type of these types of names are going to come and go, and you might hit one or two, and you're probably not going to put a lot of money into it. But that doesn't, that really doesn't mean anything. It's going to take a while before you're going to recoup once you hit one that doesn't work out. And sometimes people need the lesson on their own of being burnt before they, stay away.
Well, some people have, shall we say, maneuvered the fee they pay somebody, and we have people that pay some fees and people that don't, in terms of, some just do commissions because it might be a covered writing program, you're going to do, one trade a month. Some people, I don't know that you necessarily need a fee for that, but... despite what the world tells you, but it is totally morphed into somebody calling and saying, not so much me, but for the people that I do stuff for other people, Dan, sort of like you do stuff for other people as well, where somebody will call, well, how come I wasn't an AMC?
Absolutely. Or like you said, somebody saying that a friend or a spouse was able to make a lot of money, and then I'd ask like, oh, geez, how much did they invest? Or, it generally was pennies. It was just a quick thought at the right time. But I have to kind of go back to I'll try to talk a little about the fundamentals if they want to dig deeper, and my experience with AMC and how I've known them over the, talk a little bit about the big picture in the industry, and talk about, I really go back to what the client's objective is and the time frame of that objective. And if the time frame of your objective is longer term for retirement, or if it's even longer term, I might buy a house down the road, or I might make an investment down the road, but it's not going to be in the next 12 months. You don't want to lose that. You don't want to give up that principle. You don't want to put that principle at risk. And, a lot of people go out and buy lottery tickets. I don't. I would guess that most, PMs, portfolio managers don't, aren't the ones sitting in line at the convenience store getting their, lottery tickets. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but it just isn't, it just isn't my style. I'd rather do the homework, and there's a sense of satisfaction when you've done your homework and things move in the direction. And that, fortunately, that happens a lot for us. So that, justifies the strong returns we have. But, would I rather earn 20% and come out, a little ahead of the index and have my clients, happy, or, you know, would I like to earn, you know, 40% in one stock and everything else blows up? No.
You know, it's sort of similar to...
Not. So some people might say you get to the same place, but I think you get there with a different level. You take them at a different level of risk.
Well, you know, Dan, it's sort of similar when you hear people arguing about football and coaches. And,
yes.
And they'll say something like, well, why doesn't he throw deeper? You know, and you sit there, you and I would say, is there a coach anywhere who's that stupid that if he had a Dan Marino and he had, you know, Bob Hayes as his wide receiver that wouldn't throw deep, if he actually thought in one play he could have 6 points with some degree of certainty and get everybody off his back, he wouldn't do it? I'm going to prove that it's bad by going 3 yards in a cloud of dust and now it's fourth and one and punt. I mean, I will bet, I mean, I'm not putting you on the spot here, I guess I am, I will bet your more conservative 80-year-old people that you've had forever, at least one of them have called you and said, I want to be in Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's actually kind of a mixed bag. You know, generally the people who have asked have been a little younger, certainly not the youngest clients, but they're usually a little younger and actually not too far away from my age when they're making comments like that. There are a few people who are older, they'll ask those questions, but then what I would do is I say, yeah, let's separate an account. Let's create an account that's going to be a little more speculative, and we can manage that account for you, or you can manage it on your own, or you can have your friend who's doing really well manage it. So, you have to give some, you know, up front, you have to say that, hey, this is speculative at this point. And, you know, there's a big difference between speculative and, you know, speculation and investing. And you have to make that distinction, and that's what I do. And I also do reminders of how we've done in the past and reminders of how we've done relative to the index, keeping a lower level of risk, higher level of return, you know, lower level of fees. So, you know, and also I give them some confidence also in all the research that we do, you know, these channels of information and communication that we have with senior management that are just invaluable, I think, in terms of knowing what's going on. So if I had an in with, you know, we're not investing in AMC, but if I knew them really well as a company and knew the management team there, I might have a little more to offer. But the whole sort of meme investing based on, you know, social media sort of driving things, it just isn't my personality. You know, it just doesn't fit my personality. Everyone's going out to buy a, you know, whatever car, and it just happens to be whatever the popular car is at the time, and it may be a gas guzzler, and, you know, maybe it doesn't have a good history of, you know, the transmission breaks down in a short period of time, and, you know, it's known for having a lot of repairs, but people are still buying it because that's what they're, you know, social media is telling them, and that's not me. I'm the guy that's going to do the homework to find the ones that are, I like, but the ones that also have, you know, better history, better durability, going to do well when everything else isn't doing well. On a rainy or snowy day, they're going to perform really well. So I guess that would be the analogy I would use.
You worry about snowy days where you live?
No, it's those occasional storms that come. But haven't had any of those yet either. So we're actually doing pretty well. But, I think going back, I've had to do this even as recently as earlier this week. Having a client that was a little bit older asking the questions, you know, about more bang for the buck type of thing. And, I mean, he's already doubled the index for this year. And I had to say to him, you know, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
The return for this year. But I have to go back to, hey, you remember our original conversation? You know, you wanted more stability in your portfolio. You didn't want to see the roller coaster movement. And, you know, that concerned you. And, you know, we're doing what you said. So it's much easier when a client, I think when you're starting with a client, when they give you a, you know, you talk about your objectives, talk about your risk tolerance, and then you can produce. So for me, you just give me just tell me what you want me to do and I'll do it for you. But there are people who will change their mind, or they will listen to the press, or they will talk to a friend, and they'll find out about things like AMC and say, hey, I missed out on that. But you know, we can't spend, you can spend your whole life saying you missed out on things. You just, what I have to remind them is you've done very well in your account, and you're doing a hell of a lot better than the guy who's not invested, and you're doing a hell of a lot better than the market. So,
well, I have to believe that your setup is sort of like mine, with about 200 stocks sitting in front of you. And if you start going, well, that one's up, I should have been long. If that one's down, I should have been shorted. It's a quick way to the funny farm.
Absolutely, a quick way to the funny farm. Totally agree with you on that.
Hey, what are you making these?
Many times. Yeah, if we had. No, our job is to have confidence in the names that we invest in, and our job is to know when to get in and when to stay in and when to add and when to trim, and you know, keep it in mind our clients' objectives. You know, there are going to be times that we do have names that we'll load up on when we think that there's a lot of upside. So we are taking that incremental risk. We're adding that alpha. And it's, you know, for some people, it's a lot of risk if they're small and microcap companies, because that's, you know, we have a lot of those names that we focus on. But, you know, we minimize that risk through manager visits and, you know, company visits, frequent communication with companies, and research.
Dan, what are you making of this 975,000 people this week in the ADP numbers, 300,000 more than was expected. What do you think that does to anything here?
Yeah, I mean, today, you know, I mean, the market's selling off a little bit today. And tomorrow, I know the numbers that are coming are, you know, I think the concern in anticipation of tomorrow is that we're going to see a surprise. We may see a surprise like we did in April. So the main numbers, you know, I think there's a lot of people sort of sitting on the sidelines today, waiting to see what we're going to see tomorrow. They seem to think that those are the numbers that are more important. You know, other than, you know, that we added what, close to, it was 978,000 jobs in May. So I mean, it's my view on this is we're in a transition period with the job market. So we've got a lot of company management who are telling me we can't find enough good help. You go around your street, you know, your street, you see in the stores and the bars and the restaurants and the shops, everyone's hiring. The trucker, you know, they're hiring truckers, they're hiring. And then you hear that, you know, the numbers may not coincide with that. And now you hear, you know, more than half the states are including Florida, we're going to be, I think it's the end of this month or next month, that the additional unemployment benefits are going to go away, and now that's going to give people more motivation. And you are already hearing some, you know, a lot of companies talking about for lower level employees raising their wages by a couple of bucks. So I think sort of paying attention to the whole picture of what's going on and not just the number, because we can sometimes get caught up in the numbers and knowing really where the numbers are coming from. And then really, in a situation like this, it's just doing your own observation and watching and hearing and listening to what's going on in your local communities and you know, and also nationally. But the numbers sometimes, I don't think are always the most reflective of where we stand today. And more importantly, I think there's a lot of friction, and I think that friction comes out in different ways. And it's hard to, you know, say, okay, based on what's happening, today, with the numbers today and with the numbers tomorrow, what is that going to mean for the next month? I think we're moving in a direction where more people are going back to work. And I think companies are going to be more creative with the way they attract talent, and trying to get the best people in for the best price. And there's no question we're going to continue to see some inflation. You know, as the wages go higher, some of that's going to get passed through to the consumer or the end user. So the thing from my conversations with management, the things I've taken away that seem to be pretty common, are the wage issue, and the ability to hire good talent. So having to pay them more, having to offer an environment, a work environment with better benefits or whatever to get those employees. And then, of course, on the other side, the raw material costs and having to be creative with that as well. And again, some of that's going to get passed on. Some of it's going to involve additional cost cutting. And the way things are going forward now, the companies that are able to do that successfully are the ones that are going to win out. Those are the stocks you want to be in. The ones that are able to, you know, take this challenging environment and say, hey, you know, we're still growing. There's still a lot of upside here, I believe. But it's not going to happen from every single business. So I talked last week about a client who's a restaurant owner, and she did all the right things. And as a result, she's flying. She had her best year ever last year. She's expecting to do even better this year. But she had to close her shop on Mondays because she didn't have enough employees. Not because she didn't have enough demand, people coming in. So the lining up the door now to get in, and she's been able to find some creative ways of getting talent in. But that's going to be an issue. Those are the issues that we're faced now. Those were the issues that we were faced a year and a half ago. And we have to keep going back to that period and put our heads in it, even though it seems like a long, long time ago. Back in the early part of last year, we were talking a lot about wage inflation and not seeing it. Well, now we're seeing it. It's almost like we had the skip period. Now we're seeing the same thing with the supply chain, with supply and demand basically everywhere. And also, look at what's happening to oil. Look at what's happening to commodity prices. And oil prices in particular, I mean, we are higher now, considerably higher now than we were a year and a half ago.
Oh, sure.
So it's all very positive, I think.
Why?
I think the winners in this economy are going to be those companies who are able to manage this process well and not to get overwhelmed by it, but just to be creative in terms of passing on some costs and, maybe providing better service. I've noticed better service as a whole. I don't know if you've been out to eat much, but I know that the service in general has been much better than it had been prior to the pandemic. So whoever is going to offer that extra service, maybe that extra little benefit to their product or their service, I think is going to win out in the long run. And people are going to be discerning as more and more places open and, prices are going to be higher. So say you're going out to eat, you just have to walk into that restaurant knowing you're going to see higher prices on that menu.
But
the service has been a little bit better, and while they're offering some things, the food tastes better, they get a new chef. Whatever the thing is that they have to offer, it's going to be a good management team that can see for how they can maintain and grow their customer base.
Yeah, why,
across all industries.
Why does, this might feel like a shot fired, but it's not a 16-inch shell; it's a 12-inch. Why do people who essentially like the business world, like you do, and I do too, but I have a different view on things than most. Why? I just listened to the chairman of Coke last week talking about raising prices and this reason and that reason, and I was like Elvis; I wanted to shoot the TV. When is one of these guys going to come out and say, "I raised prices because I could"? And I don't really give a crap whether I'm paying people more or I don't. It looks to me like it started to rain, the price of the umbrellas went up, live with it. I mean, the idea that every one of these guys tries to justify it is such crap to me, I can't even go there. I mean, we had, for 20 years, even if you look at our CPI number, which is crap, it's up 50-some percent, as the median wage has gone up 10%. Okay, so how in the hell am I supposed to, one has nothing to do with the other. Some poor esoteric Coca-Cola guy that reluctantly, he gave the last button off his shirt before he raised the price of the Coke. That's so untrue, it's scary. They raise it because they can.
Absolutely, no, absolutely. And most of the, and again, that's going to, I'm not really, we don't necessarily follow Coke because it hasn't fallen our, we tend to look more at small and micro. And what I want to hear from the guys I'm talking to is just what you're saying. I want to hear, we have plenty of room to go. We could continue to increase prices. We can continue to pass them on. And if, we need to raise them more, we can do that. And here's our plan for how we're going to, change, add some, produce some extra value in order to do that. But I do hear just exactly what you're saying. I do hear some of these smaller company management saying that they're able to do it. So that's why they're doing it.
Well, yeah. I mean,
think it's going to impact. It's, they're not going to lose any customers as a result, and they have either a monopoly but they have they offer a better product or a better service, and they can provide a little bit more value added. So they can increase prices.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, I still dabble in construction stuff, not to mention, since people know I know that stuff, I'm always helping somebody with a deck or something. You can walk into Home Depot, they can double the price of the screws. Nobody knows. Nobody cares.
Right.
I mean, you do care. You realize that you might have put a deck up last year and you put it up this year and it cost you twice as much, but unless you go through your receipts, you're not going to say, wow, I bought 100 103-inch screws last year and it was $40, now it's $50. I mean, we're not talking 41 anymore or 42. You know, I
double the price of lumber.
Yeah, I mean, but I want on a more broad number. What is, I'm going to say, you probably have been in coffee shops, emporiums, maybe even a bar or two, where people are absolutely laughing at the inflation numbers. Where, you know, the price of a sandwich is up like 40%. We're not talking about one or two. The things are to the moon. I mean, your used cars are up 10% in a month, and yet you can contrast that with your people in the Fed. Oh man, you know, as soon as we catch more than 2%, we're gonna lean on. I mean, this bifurcation. How's that for a word? It's almost laughable. I mean, it
is. Yeah.
I mean, what's going to happen when they finally impact? I mean, it's. I can't imagine these guys would afford a 6% rate now, or not to mention 12 or whatever you need to fight something like this.
Yeah, and I think I hear your concern, and I totally agree with you. If I hear what you're saying, that if you know this is what's happening, open up your eyes. You know, they need to open their eyes and see what's going on, and certainly they got to get out there and see what's going on in the world. And a starting point would be good. You know, and a slower uptick in rates, if you will, a slower movement in the direction of controlling some of this is going to be much better than we have to make up for what we've lost. And being somewhat anticipatory and kind of getting away from these words of transitory. I just read an article about all the different ways, you know, all the different things, if you had to put them off, you know, what should you put off? And one of them they used as an example was buying a car. Another one was traveling. Any type of purchase, doing home improvements on your house. I wouldn't do that. I mean, I think you come to a point in time where you're ready to do this. If you have the money to do it, people are going to do it. And people have waited a long time, for example, to travel, so they're getting out there now and traveling. And the numbers, if you look at, you know, the flights that we had even over the weekend, hotel stays and all that, they're up significantly because people are ready to do that. So I don't know that, you know, waiting just a little bit longer is really going to matter. And if anything, you know, rates are could continue to go up higher if we see, prices could continue to go up higher if we continue to see, when we see rate increases. So I don't know if this sort of pushing it off to the future is necessarily the smartest thing. I mean, kind of living in the environment we're in right now and managing the best that you can. And it's not a bad environment. It's actually a pretty good environment.
So are you giving your employees, like they did in the Weimar Republic, an hour off in the morning to do your shopping because it'll be more expensive by the afternoon?
Yeah. Well, they can do it online, so they're probably doing it. They're
that's
probably
true.
Doing, my employees may be doing their shopping in between research reports.
I didn't even think of that. Dan, thank you very much, buddy. Talk at you next week. SP Futures up down 30. NASDAQ Futures are down 147. Be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708- 208-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. These Mr. Dave Scutino on the board. S&P Futures down 30, NASDAQ Futures down 146. Wild morning. We're going on with this AMC and so forth. Dow's down 200, individual stocks in the Dow. Boeing down roughly 3. We've got Goldman Sachs down 3. We got Microsoft down 2. Salesforce down 3, so mostly stuff to the downside, but not horrible, horrible. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 96.6, FTSE down 85, that's 1.2%, CAC around down 39, that's 0.6. Over in Asia, again, we've got this dichotomy here where the Nikkei's up 111.4%, Shanghai down 12.4, and Hang Seng down 331, 1.1. So, again, Japan going a different way than the mainland. Well, I guess... I won't consider Hong Kong the mainland. Hong Kong's an island. At least I know enough about geography for that. Bonds. Well, as a way of review, yesterday we had the, Dow Jones is up 25, S&P up 6, NASDAQ up 19. So, slightly again, one of those days where we were up higher during the day and kind of sold off on the close. Not enough to be lower, but still a closed week. Bonds. 1.61, that's up, 2 basis points. The Bund minus 0.18, so not heading towards zero anymore, going the other way. Japan up 1 basis point to 0.09. We've got oil, again, well, actually coming off a little bit here, but not very much. West Texas down 5 cents, 68.78. Brent down 2 cents, but still over 70 at 71.33. Natural gas down 2 cents, 305. RBOB unchanged at 219. We've got gold down 18 bucks, 18.91. Silver down 46 cents, 27.74. Copper down a dime at 449. And we've got crypto is up 969 to 38,000. Bitcoin matches all crypto. Bitcoin down up 969 to 38,867. David, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning. 7:36 in Chicago. Currently, our weather is 67 and sunny. It's going to be a beautiful day in Chicago. 82 degrees with lots of sun. Phoenix right now for our listeners. It's 81 and clear. It's going to be a hot one. 107 and sunny. Traffic, we got our normal backups on the Kennedy and Eisenhower due to long-term construction. 55 North, there's a slowdown, which is making that a mess right at the exit ramp at the Ryan. And also, there's a disabled vehicle blocking the right lane right before Ashland. In sports, NBA playoffs, the Suns take on Lakers for Game 6. Major League Baseball last night, the Sox game was postponed, and they take on the Tigers tonight. Cubs, who are red hot, beat the Padres 6-1. They'll play the Giants. Diamondbacks drop one in the Mets 7-6, and they play the Brewers today. This weekend in Belmont Stakes, Saturday, Bob Baffert will not be having any horses in this race due to his suspension over the second positive drug test for his horse. Back to you, Chief.
So, John, how are you?
How about you?
I'm all right. I'm just worried about David because he knew enough to buy 8.5 million shares of this AMC stock from the company at 27.5, and he made $190 million, and we bought him a martini the other night to celebrate, but now it went up higher. So now we've decided he actually lost $300 million because it went higher than that, so we fired his moldy ass, and we kicked him out, just said, don't let the door hit in the ass on the way out. What do you think?
Timing is everything.
Timing is everything. So instead of making $190 million, he lost $300 million. This is the new way we're judging people. Not, you walk in and you see a stock up $20 and say, you should have been long that store. Get out of here. What do you think, David?
Yeah, I'll take the $190 million.
See, now, but you're an old floor guy. You're like, hey, if I walk in the next morning with more money in my account than the day before, I had a winning day. That's not the way people think anymore. You're getting old.
Yeah, I guess so, but I'll take the $190 million.
That's why I always, whenever you hear guys like Reinsdorf, and I don't dislike Reinsdorf at all, I mean, but he said the worst trade he ever made, the most money he ever lost was keeping the Sox in Chicago. Well, I don't think the Sox have ever had a losing year. They pay zero rent.
Right.
So that's a whole different now to a Southsider or a trader. Losing is having less in your account at the end of the day than you started with. It's not, I'm up 10% and I could have been up 15. That's not losing. At least not where I come from. And since David comes from like two doors away, I think he feels the same way.
Oh, I absolutely do.
I mean, it's this idea that I lost dough when you're up money. I'm like, wait a minute, you didn't lose anything. What's the matter with you? I'll show you what loss means. Loss means you started your account had 200 grand, and when you left, you had 100 grand. That's a loss, right? Just saying. So what do you make of this whole crazy? Well, first of all, Janet, if we all know that if everybody just bought and nobody ever sold, we'd all be rich in a month, right?
Right.
Can you manufacture wealth just by bidding stuff up like tulips and things?
No, not unless you're an alchemist or you know somebody who can take fool's gold and turn it into something valuable. That's never worked.
God, what percentage of people in the world today, David, know what an alchemist is? I'm going to say not very many.
I would say none.
Declined over the last 10, 20 years, too. The word doesn't come up that much anymore. It's a fascinating topic.
Well, the guys were trying to turn. It wasn't just something into gold, wasn't it? Lead.
Yeah, and base or stuff, and refining it, and you know, adding things to it. I mean, it's a chemical process, kind of with a fanciful side to it, and you know, supernatural elements or occult elements, you know, into it too. So, like a Faustian, you know, bargain, you know, to trade on with the underworld or. You know, the evil side of things in order to make wealth or, you know, make beautiful things out of nothing or, it's got a kind of fairy tale quality to it that's always been popular in fiction and fairy tales and stuff too. But, you know, it's got a real tug. I think taking junk and turning it into attractive stuff has always been a way of making money.
Well, I know you two will know the answer to this, but what movie was it? Gold referred to as the stuff dreams are made of.
Oh, good question.
Is it called Maltese Falcon?
Yeah, Humphrey Bogart.
Yeah, great movie.
Yeah, with was it Sidney Greenstreet and who was the lady? Was it Lorna?
Mary Astor. And,
Mary Astor, yeah.
The Mrs. O'Shaughnessy, and there's the Sam Spade secretary played by Lee Patrick.
Yeah.
Peter Lorre. I mean, it's got a superb cast. It's a great screenplay.
Oh yeah.
Great. John Huston, director. It's one of his first films, I think, he directed. Great movie.
Oh, it's the wrong one. Let's go get the other one. they headed out for the next. It's you know, I was a guest. I didn't do anything. Our buddy Dac, not Dr. J, the other Dac, was in, his wife was on a board of a little company hospital. So, of course, they got the big shindig at McCormick Place. And so we go over, not McCormick Place, Field Museum. And it just happened to have a huge traveling, you know, not circus, but a massive, was there like a year, about gold. So, of course, I snuck upstairs. I don't want to hear speeches. And ducked into the, it was one of those fascinating 2 hours I ever spent. How much gold, where it comes from, how much gold there is, and why it's mined the way it is, and why they call it veins. There actually is, it gets superheated somewhere in the bowels of the earth. It actually squirts up in any kind, there's a weakness in racks. So it actually looks like it looks like your central your blood supply system. If you see it you're not going to find a chunk of gold. It's in these. It looks just like a vein. I mean, you take a picture of somebody's arm or something, and it's fascinating. And I think, I don't know, David, you can check. I think the sum total of all the gold in the world that's ever been mined essentially would fit in an Olympic swimming pool, I think, is the amount. And it's
I've seen that statistic. It just blows my mind.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like there's, you know, it's not like it's a, there's concrete mixers loaded with gold. I mean, even how many concrete mixers would it take to fill up a swimming pool? A lot, right? I mean, there's many cubic feet in there. But pretty fascinating. And right now, if you watch the gold, if you watch the market much here, you want to look at this interplay between the metal and the GDX. Because I keep betting on it to go forward, and I think I'm early. Well, I have been early for 2 years, so... but we've made some money lately, so we're back to being, you know, good in there. But right here, the gold's roughly 1,900, and the GDX, which is the gold miners index, one of them, but it's the one most people trade, is trading was down as little this morning, so it's roughly 39-ish. And at 1,900, that's kind of where it historically has been, you know, in the high 30s. But the weird part is the last time, which it did last year, gold went to 2,000, which is from 1,900 to 2,000 is 5% by my calculations. The GDX actually went to like 45. So it went up like 15% as gold went up 5. Because when you have these metal stocks, it's kind of not linear. I mean, it's some number, even like copper. Say if copper's $3 a pound, your copper companies, you know, are making a living. You know, at 350, they're doing pretty well, but at 4, it's like all profit. So it's not linear at all. It's like if you own a restaurant and you're charging $6 for a hamburger, you're getting by. At 7, you're making some dough. All of a sudden, you have inflation, and none of your costs go up, and all of a sudden, your burger goes up to 11. I mean, you're fat and happy, right? I mean, it's not linear. Your costs don't go up with you linearly. So it's, you know, you got when you're dealing with these commodities and stuff. I mean, it's really a whole different way of cost accounting than on an individual stock. You know, for basic case is a farmer. You know, it might cost him, you know, $1.80 to $2 to get a bushel of corn in the ground, and you know, there's some risk. You could get a hailstorm, a flood, and so forth. But by and large, maybe, what do you figure, David, these days? It used to be like a buck and a half to get it in the ground. I gotta believe it's up to like $180, $190, something like that, maybe $2. It's been so long. So if he sells it for $350, you know, he pays for his seed, he pays for his stuff, he pays for his electric bill. If he sells it for $450, he probably had a pretty nice year. He and his wife are taking a vacation and so forth. If he sells it for $750, all of a sudden it's a banner year. It's a once in a two decade year. It's not linear at all when you start talking about mining or farming and things like that. It's every one of those metals or every grain is its own lifetime's work to understand all this stuff, pretty much, right, David? I mean, it's like,
yeah.
Remember the original?
I agree with that.
Remember the original Kung Fu episode where they're showing him the different styles? And he said, "Well, how long does it take to master a style?" He goes, "For every style, a lifetime."
Right. So I did look it up, Tom. It's 197,576 tons of gold is the best estimate, which 2/3 have been mined since 1950.
Wow. And how, but looking at it, how big of a lump would that be? I mean, would it be an Olympic swimming pool or bigger? Does it say?
It said it'd be enough to fill two Olympic-sized swimming pools.
Two, okay. Yeah, I mean, but certainly not. I mean, people think there's just like truckloads and truckloads. I mean, there isn't. That's why people are always concerned about an audit at any of these places. You know, even like the GLD is the ETF for gold. So in theory, for every ounce of gold somebody buys, there's an ounce of gold behind it in a vault someplace, right, David? Same way with your spider. In theory, and I think in fact, for every spider, there's the exact proportion of stocks held in a vault at State Street Bank. So when you buy a spider, you're actually buying those stocks. There's no futures involved. You're buying the physical. And when people buy more and more spiders, they go out and buy more and more stock and dump it in the vault. So that's why when you do these ETFs, and now there's a gazillion ETFs, you got to make sure, well, I think you should make sure that the one you're trading is one that is actually has a physical, where the oil does not. I mean, it'd be different if you buy a future or a oil ETF. There is no oil. They make it synthetically through the futures, which is a lot different. So, John, what's your inflation story of the week? What went up 20% right in front of your eyes like yesterday?
Well, I'm trying to think. I mean, I had a couple things I wanted to mention. Shopping for appliances has kind of been a shock for me because I had to replace the refrigerator. Well,
could you find one?
I did, actually, and then it got delivered even,
wow,
on schedule. But I downsized from what I had before, which I guess made it a little easier to find one. But 95% of the stuff I looked at had, you know, stuff saying back-ordered, no available, the delivery date, out of stock, whatever, question marks all over the place. Same thing with stoves. I mean, I was just poking around while I was on Home Depot and Lowe's and App and some other sites, but I was stunned at how hard it is to shop for kind of basic stuff. And it isn't even so much price as just basic availability.
So what'd you end up with? One of those that you put in your dorm room with 2 6-packs in it, or what?
That probably should be fine at this point in my lifetime.
Just get the rest on Yelp or whatever.
My needs are simpler than they were even in college.
God. Well, Audrey had she got some new appliances, and we always use Apt or those guys are usually terrific. And there's,
yeah, I had good experience. Yeah.
And so she ended up, she finds some lady there, and she went up there, and of course that was one that was on the floor model, so she got that one cheap, and some other they'd open the box, so she got everything at a really nice price, and really good stuff. I mean, I think those guys are great. So I call the same lady, and I say, well, you know, I'm looking for a new stove, and do you have one out of the box? And she goes, we don't have one in the box, let alone out of the box. I went, oh, we got one coming in like 4 weeks. You want it? I guess I'll take it. you got one coming in. It's looking like what I want. I guess you got one. I need one. I guess I'll take it. There's a decision making process.
Yeah, I couldn't believe so many of them had little things want delivered, get as soon as August 28th. It's like, well, I can't go to August 28th without a refrigerator, so I suspect most people can't, but I just found it amusing that they knew they'd have one in August, but they wouldn't have one until August. So that was kind of distressing to me. It's like there's more glitches in this supply chain stuff that I realized.
Well, go to a place that that makes furniture, or you know, they order the stuff out. It's like 12 weeks to get a sofa at some of these joints.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I think
custom. You know, it seems it requires raw materials, lumber, whatever. The delays are significant, which you know it has the effect of driving up the price too. Because if you want to circumvent that, you're going to pay more. You want to get it sooner, there'll be a premium attached to it if you can find somebody who will give it to you sooner. So that kind of increases the appetite and the growth in price too. So,
well, I'm going to go back to my Chicago roots and say it gives you an excuse to raise the price.
Yeah, right. You raise prices because you can, like you said earlier today. It's true.
It's what did Milton Friedman say? The inflation is always and every time a monetary phenomenon. I mean, the fact that they're pouring money into this. And I'll give kind of a historical example on that. Not even you, John, were around, but after World War, or after the Civil War, there actually was a time, and people equate, and that's why the Fed has to be real, real slow at this idea that when you pour money into the system, you help the economy. Economy has a vibrancy, all its own. In a pace that is determined by a lot of stuff other than the amount of money in the system. I mean, you don't want to have a lack of credit, because if you can you can certainly stifle the economy by having a lack of money in the system, because people can't borrow even to pursue good ideas. So you can put a gag around the economy for sure. But the idea that by putting more money in, you're not going to necessarily increase invention, you're not going to increase productivity, you're not going to do any of that stuff. So after the Civil War, there was one of the most highly productive and eras in U.S. history, and with the innovation. Whenever wars always come up with a bunch of innovation, no matter what wars they were. And so all these people came back from the war, and they needed stuff, okay? But they had issued so much money into the system, read the term greenback. You know, why was it called a greenback, John? You know this.
Well, it was the first paper money. It was green.
It was backed by nothing but the green on the bill, right? That's the name greenback. I mean, there was a name, right? So they decided they wanted to go back on the gold standard, which they had gone off of, they being the U.S., and so the only way to do that was to drag the greenbacks out of the economy. So the federal government essentially, I don't know how they did it, but they dragged the greenbacks out. So they actually lowered the money supply, the exact opposite of what the Fed has been doing in the last 2 years. And it doesn't matter. The prices of things went down, but the efficiency and the production actually went up. They just got, so it can go either way. It's not like if we were going to enter a very productive era that the stuff that was 100 hours couldn't be 75 2 years from now. You don't want it to do that because you might be choking off credit, but you can still have innovation and growth with the money supply going the other way. So this idea that we have to like double the money supply just to get anybody to do anything is such BS. It's you know, right, let's put it this way. It's not reflected anywhere in history. Is that a fair statement, Jen?
Right. Right. I mean, and the thing that really killed the prosperity after the Civil War was when Jay Gould and others were cornering the gold market and, you know, it kind of paralyzed the economy. And you had the panic of 1873. There was there hadn't been a bad one like that for 30 or 40 years in U.S. history, but that was a particularly bad one because there had been such a rush up before. A lot of fortunes were destroyed, and, you know, right after the Chicago fire here, too, in the midst of rebuilding, all of a sudden everything stopped. You know, so it was just kind of a, and that was private greed, really, that kind of made that happen, but, because it was working pretty well, even changing the currency that way and withdrawing the money hadn't had a cataclysmic effect on growth
was
at all.
Was that guy? How did he get to be? That's a name. He had to be one of the biggest scoundrels in all of history.
Gould. Oh yeah.
But there isn't a railroad that guy didn't somehow
right
lend some toxic pee to somebody. I mean, everyone had the guy coming in as sort of an investor, taking something over, breaking it up, screwing it up. I mean, out of, you know, the hundreds of railroads there were, I bet the guys somehow had a hand in messing up half of them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I read a book about him some years ago, which the title escapes me at the moment, but, I mean, it alluded in the title to what a scumbag he was.
I mean, it was
borne out in the book, too.
It's like, you know, it's one thing, if I've always said in my Southside Catholic upbringing, being immoral is one thing. I mean, I guess to an extent, somebody is always willing to do. Not everybody's been totally moral their entire life, right? But there's degrees of it. The person you really got to watch out for is the person who's amoral. Doesn't even know the difference of right from wrong. You know, that's why in a business relationship or in a business world, and that's why I've always put like somebody like Trump in there. The whole idea is the deal itself. There's no such thing as being gentlemanly about it or being more, but he's not alone. I mean, but a lot of people really believe that's a very strong positive thing for somebody who's a big businessman, that you only think about business.
Right, and a lack of allegiance to anybody or anything.
Anybody, anything, right. Employees, you name it. I mean, just who cares if they're here or not here? If I fire everybody and I open up a plant in China and I get...
I'll get by. I'll find a way.
Yeah, if I have 4 cents more than the bottom...
It's an uncaringness that is really destructive.
Well, it is in the long run. I mean, a lot of that has to do, John, with how you're compensated. One of the classes we took at University of Chicago was like an advanced cost accounting class, and I remember so much from that class, but one of it was we spent like 3 weeks in designing executive compensation packages. There is nothing harder in the world than doing that properly. Because no matter what you did, the teacher would go, that sucks. You know, what are you talking about? If you do that, the guy's going to do this, and you go, wait a minute, I didn't think of that. But it's hard to actually list. It's like describing pornography. I mean, you sort of can't do it. When you see it, but there's a lot to it. I mean, to sit there and go, okay, we're gonna pay quarterly. But if you did it perfectly, you would never have pollution, because the person would act in such a way that he would know that the cost of cleaning it up 10 years from now is going to be way more than the cost of whatever you gain by doing it today. And we've seen that, right?
Right. And if you have somebody who is willing to look that far ahead to worry about that kind of stuff, instead of what's it going to be when I get my golden parachute, I don't really give a darn.
Yeah, so it's all, but they actually put all that down on a piece of paper to motivate somebody to be moral, to make sure that the community isn't going to throw the plant out after 10 years. So you can't just pour everything in the river, or you can't pour it on somebody else's backyard, right? So all that stuff has to be sort of, it's this combination of short-term, long-term, making sure that if it doesn't work for everybody, eventually it's not going to work for anybody. All that stuff, to actually write that down is really a challenge in a contract. I mean, it's an incredible challenge. I wasn't very good at it, to be quite blunt. I was happy when that part went over, but no matter who it was, somebody would do it one night, and he'd pick somebody's contract, and he'd start reading it off, and the whole class would go, that's not going to work. Did you ever do that to any of your students in class?
Oh, yeah. Let's imagine for a minute, blah, blah, blah. And what it really means is that you have to kind of predict the lengths to which people will go in order to live within the limits that have been set for them, but also make out like a bandit. And then, of course, that's the oldest thing driving forces in people's psyches is how not to get caught.
So, is there any truth to the rumor that the reason why most people don't want to come back to work is they're trading AMC all day at home? What do you think, David?
Well, it's all the younger kids.
It's got to be hard for that.
Anyway, AMC is now down $1.75, trading 60.71. It was 78 when we came in, so we said it wasn't worth 78. So I guess we could tweet out, David. We call the market. We turned AMC, Stocks and Jacks. S&P futures down 27. NASDAQ futures down 120. If we were on CNBC, we'd say that, right? We'll be back tomorrow.
You're walking away with an Emmy Award.
Yeah. We'll be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.